now in its 157th day. The Israeli genocide in Gaza claims more civilian lives as the death toll tops 31,000, mostly women and children. Palestinian resistance fighters carry out more retaliatory operations against Israeli forces in Gaza, inflicting losses and casualties on them. Also in the headlines, as Muslims mark the start of the holy month of Ramadan, Israel continues its campaign of starvation against Palestinians in Gaza by refusing to allow much-needed aid into the Strip. Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Mias. Thanks for joining us. Israel continues its genocide of Palestinians in Gaza, killing more civilians in fresh strikes across the besieged territory. One of the latest attacks hit a residential building in a Gaza neighborhood, killing 16 civilians. The Gaza Health Ministry said Monday that the death toll from over 5 months of Israeli genocide in Gaza has risen to over 31,100 people. More than 72,000 others have been injured. The regime has also razed most of the civilian and other structures in Gaza. According to Gaza's government, 220 mosques have been destroyed in the coastal territory since October 7. The military wing of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has inflicted losses on Israeli forces in its fresh retaliatory attacks in Gaza. The Al-Qassam Brigade said its fighters managed to detonate a building in an undisclosed location in Gaza, killing and injuring a number of Israeli infantry forces. It added that resistance fighters clashed with another group of Israeli troops inside of a tunnel, which caused several casualties among invaders. The military wing of Hamas also said that an Israeli engineering corps soldier was shot in the head in an area near the southern city of Khan Yunis. And in northern Gaza, the Al-Qassam brigades targeted an Israeli military post using a drone. Another Israeli soldier was also targeted by resistance snipers in Gaza City. Palestinian resistance fighters have been putting stiff resistance to Israeli soldiers since the start of the regime's ground invasion of Gaza. A former Palestinian prisoner says Israel is attempting to achieve, through negotiations, what it has failed to obtain by force and war.
One of the reasons behind the Al-Aqsa flood operation was to capture Israeli soldiers for the purpose of conducting a prisoner swap. As far as I know, and according to media reports, more than 140 Israeli captives are currently held by the resistance in Gaza. The Israeli regime launched an attack and killed Palestinians in order to extract the captives by force. But the resistance has refused to free any captive held in Gaza unless Palestinians held in Israeli jails are freed, particularly elderly people, patients, women, and children. If they want their captives, then we want our detainees in return. Currently, negotiations are underway to reach a prisoner swap deal. Israel, by nature, always eludes. The initial framework for the deal was outlined by Israel in Paris, and we didn't intervene at all. They sent that framework deal to Hamas for consideration. And for its part, Hamas sent it to other Palestinian factions. That proposal only serves the interests of Israel, as the regime wants to take its captives at a low price. The regime apparently believes that they can achieve through negotiations what they failed to take by force and war, and that's impossible. That proposal was rejected, but amendments were made to it. Israel, however, rejected those amendments. We only call for the release of our detainees, for a ceasefire and the withdrawal of the Israeli troops, and for allowing food to enter Gaza. We don't want anything else.
Sheikh Talal Abdulrahman, who has been a prisoner in Israeli jails for 18 years, made the comments in an exclusive interview with the latest episode, or in the latest episode of Press TV's Hidden Files program. Abdulrahman detailed the hardships that Palestinian inmates face in the regime's jails. He also underlined the Israeli regime's escalating crackdown on Palestinians since October 7. Israeli troops have carried out fresh incursions into several towns and neighborhoods across the occupied West Bank on the first day of the holy month of Ramadan. Regime forces raided the city of Qalqilya, Nur Shams refugee camp near Tulkarm, and a village west of Ramallah. They abducted a number of Palestinians following clashes with resistance fighters. Several Palestinians were also detained after Israeli forces denied entry of worshippers into the Al-Aqsa Mosque. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement denounced the move. It said Israel is playing with fire, by the desecrations of the mosque and blocking worshippers' access to the holy site. The Israeli regime has kept Al-Aqsa Mosque under a tight siege for 5 months now. We were earlier talked to our correspondents from Ramallah, Monica and Dil, to get the latest updates regarding fresh Israeli raids in the occupied West Bank.
The Israeli forces stormed several areas, as you have mentioned. The Israelis raided Al-Jalazon refugee camp, arrested a number of Palestinians there, including former prisoners. The Israeli forces has stormed the city of Tul Karim and the refugee camp of Nur Shams. And for several hours, the people said that exchange of fire had taken place between members of the resistance groups and the Israeli forces. But during this raid, the Israeli forces caused severe destruction using the bulldozers in the infrastructure, in the roads. The Israelis had also stormed Al-Balu'a in Al-Biri and Shukba area near Ramallah and detained a number of Palestinians. But in Qalqilya, there is an operation taking place up till the moment where the Israeli forces stormed the Qalqilya as well as the Kufr Saba neighborhood and stormed the house of one of the paramedics there and detained him. According to the Prisoners Commission and the Palestinian Prisoners Society, the Israelis have detained so far 7,510 Palestinians since the 7th of October, including 500 children, 240 women, as well as 57 journalists.
Time now for the news review of this bulletin. Muslims around the world are marking the fasting month of Ramadan against the backdrop of the U.S.-Israeli genocide in the besieged Gaza Strip. Iran, Morocco, Libya, Oman, and Jordan have announced a Tuesday start for the holy month. Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Egypt, Algeria, and Tunisia have already announced Monday as the beginning of Ramadan. People across the Palestinian territories, including in Gaza and the occupied West Bank, also began their fasting on Monday. This is amid malnutrition and dehydration in the Gaza Strip, including in the southern city of Rafah, where some 1.5 million people are taking shelter from Israeli airstrikes. Many international organizations have warned of a looming catastrophe if Israel does not allow humanitarian aid to enter the blockaded territory. Mutiaba Musaba is a correspondent joining us from Deir al-Balah. We also have Jafar Ramini, who is a Palestinian writer and political analyst, joining us from Fremantle in Australia. Welcome to you both. Mutiaba Musaba, let me start with you. So we know it's the month of Ramadan, and I'm wondering how Palestinians there are coping with this, given the fact that they're still being attacked from every which way. And of course, many are starving.
Yes, Kaveh, actually this Ramadan is unprecedented in terms or compared to the precedented months. As you know that the people of Gaza Strip are welcoming this month with more airstrikes, more bloodshed and more destruction as the Israeli occupation forces are still committing more crimes and more massacres against the Palestinian civilians here in the Gaza Strip. Over the last night, the Israeli occupation warplanes destroyed a residential building in Al-Zaytun neighborhood, claiming the lives of at least 16 Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children. And even in Rafah city, the city that houses at least 1.5 million Palestinian civilians, these moments actually another residential building was destroyed by the Israeli warplanes, claiming the lives of at least 4 Palestinian civilians. In addition to that, the Israeli artillery maintained its shelling towards the eastern part of the central area of Gaza Strip here. Al-Burej refugee camp and the Al-Mughraga neighborhood were targeted heavily by the intense Israeli shelling of that Israeli forces on the ground. While in Khan Yunis city, the Israeli occupation forces also maintained blowing up several and more residential buildings, particularly in Al-Fukhari neighborhood, which is located in the eastern part of Khan Yunis city. and even the surrounding areas of Hamad neighborhood located in the western part of Khan Yunis, several and multiple Palestinian residential buildings and houses were completely destroyed and blown up by the Israeli occupation forces using the explosive devices. We are talking about continuous Israeli airstrikes that are still hitting several areas of Gaza Strip and claiming more lives of the Palestinian civilians. However, on the ground, the Israeli starvation war is still continued against the Palestinian people. Over the last couple of hours, the Gaza's health ministry announced that three Palestinian babies actually passed away and died of hunger and famine as they were suffering from the dehydration and the malnutrition over the lack of the food and the milk and the drinkable water. And this number rising and soaring incrementally as thousands of the Palestinian children are suffering from the same circumstances and the same catastrophic humanitarian conditions. So generally we can say that this Ramadan comes actually while the people here in Gaza are completely afflicted by the continuous Israeli genocide in Gaza. Over to you, Kofi.
Jafar Mamani, it's a really desperate situation, not that it wasn't before. And, you know, the U.S. president did promise that it would have some kind of a truce before Ramadan. But we know that Hamas also has been steadfast in not wanting a temporary one, amongst other diversions that there have been. How do you view what's happening here in terms of the responsibility? We know, obviously, Israel is the one that's executing it, but it's the U.S. that is the one that's supporting the genocidal onslaught that's happening.
I view it as a total disaster. I view the Americans as being totally complicit, if not partners, in this genocide and starvation of the Palestinian people. You mentioned Ramadan, and this is the irony. Even on the seeing of the crescent, the Muslim world cannot agree, and that is part of the problem. We are divided and we are fragmented, and Israel and America knows it, and they encourage that. And President Biden, in his speech to the nation on Sunday, he was interviewed on television, live on television in America, and he said that the Netanyahu is doing Israeli disservice. No mention of the 30 plus thousand Palestinians who were killed. He was just worried about the reputation of Israel. And not to miss the point, Mr. Netanyahu immediately on Sunday made an interview with Bild, the German tabloid, and he absolutely refuted what the president said. He said, no, I'm not doing this service to the Israeli to Israel. All the Israelis agree with me that we must continue this war until we finish Hamas, i.e., until we ethnically cleanse Gaza totally. And he said, and another thing, Mr. President should know that the majority of Israelis do not want a Palestinian state shoved down their throats. So there it is. It's in the open. They called for genocide and ethnic cleansing from the word go, and the world keeps saying Israel has the right to defend itself. The Palestinians have no rights. And when you see what's going on in Gaza, and believe me, my friend, I'm in contact with hundreds and hundreds of families in Gaza, all begging to leave. And I'm in a dilemma here. Do I want to empty Gaza and do Israel's bidding, or encourage my people to stay and suffer even more and even die? This is it. This is the world looking at genocide happening on camera every day and looking the other way. Another thing, if I may, the United States of America could stop this with a phone call from Mr. Biden to Netanyahu to say stop it. They did it before and they can do it now. But of course, Biden is so much a Zionist. He is more Zionist than Netanyahu himself. He was asked in that interview, are there any red lines for you, Mr. President? And he said, no, and I will not abandon Israel. So what are you doing, Mr. President? You start a corridor between Cyprus and Gaza. This is not new.
All right, thank you very much for that. We do appreciate it. Jafar Ramini there, a Palestinian writer and political analyst, and also Muti Abu Musaba, a correspondent from Deir al-Balah. With that, we come to an end of our news review. The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah has carried out retaliatory operations against Israeli targets amid heightened tensions north of the occupied territories. Hezbollah said it fired two missiles against Israeli positions across southern Lebanese border. The movement also said it targeted an Israeli military and missile base with four drones. For more on that story, we're now joined by our Beirut correspondent, Mariam Saleh. Mariam, what do you have for us?
Well, we do know that Hezbollah has launched several operations, but the most significant one is the one that you mentioned, of course, against the barracks of Keilah, and that is an area which is considered very strategic for the Israelis. Also, this is, of course, very qualitative, especially with the fact that Hezbollah decided to use four drones, kamikaze-style drones, and this means that this target is very important. They say that they hit their target very precisely, and that is what they call the command center, which they targeted is the command center for the air defense system and the rocket defense areas of the Israelis. And so they have targeted the Keilah post before, the barracks in that area, but here to say that they're using four kamikaze drones, I believe we should have some interesting footage. If Hezbollah does have that footage, I think we would have a very significant operation, since we have been hearing from the Israelis lately that Hezbollah has very focused on basically targeting the defense systems of the Israelis. And this, although has not stopped the Israelis' activities when it comes to their air activities and their drones flying over Lebanese skies, however, it will be on the long run very detrimental for the Israeli defenses in any type of confrontation that they will have to face with Hezbollah. They are basically getting weakened in that state, and they are also losing their ammunition. We know that there is a lack of ammunition, especially those rockets that are used to intercept Hezbollah rockets. Now, Hezbollah also launched with their mortars and their guided missiles and perhaps even anti-tank missiles, the Jalal al-Alam post, which is also one of the posts that is usually targeted. It's on the eastern side it's on the western side of the border. They also launched another attack against Israeli soldiers in Talat al-Tayhat.
Thank you for that. Mariam Saleh there talking to us from Beirut. Thank you, Mariam. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Economic divide.
As the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war completes its fifth month, economic indicators on the West Bank show a dismal performance, strangled by Palestinian worker restrictions and the Israeli regime holding to Palestinian Authority tax revenues. Well, the future looks dim, especially since the violence continues in the occupied West Bank. Hi, I'm Kaveh Tahweh. Welcome to Economic Divide. Coming up in this program, we will take a look at the warning that was issued by the World Bank when it came to the West Bank economy. Now, one of them is cross-border wages of $5.5 billion that's been affected by what's going on in the West Bank. That is obviously a big worry for the Palestinian economy. Next, one of the factors that has contributed to this is the Palestinian Authority's tax money being withheld. Israel collects that money. The funds withheld is something that affects the economy of Palestine. And this is money that pays 143,000 workers to go spend it. But if they don't have it, how can they do that? Next, the Israeli West Bank aggression. Over 400 Palestinians have been killed. Violence continues almost on a daily basis. And these two factors obviously impacts the economy not only of Israel, but also of the occupied West Bank. Israel's genocidal war on the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip and the regime's daily atrocities in the occupied West Bank has devastated Palestine's economy. Apart from the catastrophic human losses, the onslaught has resulted in the destruction of tens of thousands of housing units, with over 1.2 million individuals currently without homes. A report by the World Bank says gross domestic product of the Gaza Strip plummeted by 80% in the fourth quarter of 2023. While the GDP of the West Bank also fell by 22%. For the Gaza Strip, the combination of pre-existing high levels of poverty, widespread internal displacement, the destruction of homes, fixed assets, and productive capacity, coupled with a massive economic downturn, realistically means that nearly every resident will live in poverty, at least in the short term. North Gaza infrastructure is heavily impacted, with over 62% of all roads damaged or destroyed. Primary roads bear the brunt, with 92% affected, almost 60% of which are destroyed. Secondary roads also face severe damage, with just over 60% rendered unusable. On the energy front, almost 62% of the Strip's electricity feeder lines are damaged or destroyed. During the early stages of the onslaught, Israel turned off the supply of electricity to Gaza. Time now for our online media post. First up, taking a look at what was posted on X at World Bank has said latest analysis on the economic impact of the conflict on the Palestinian economy shows that the GDP dropped by over 80% in the Gaza Strip and 22% in the West Bank. That's for Q4 2023. We then went to a website. Israel's war in Gaza is strangling the West Bank's economy. Went on to say in the West Bank, the GDP has fallen by 22%. Unemployment has skyrocketed to 30%, up from 14% before the onslaught. Well, they call it the war, we call it the onslaught. Also saying because of the supply chain bottlenecks, prices are going up, then incomes are lower and the demand is shrinking. Next, an issue that we have paid more attention to later on in the program, the U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen urging Israel to restore economic ties to the West Bank. She said that she had called on Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel to reduce barriers to commerce for Palestinians. Then we took a look at another website. It said the Gaza war, again, they call it war, we call it an onslaught or aggression, turns the West Bank into an economic time bomb. Went on to say Israel's decision to ban cross-border workers and block Palestinian funds has pushed the local economy to the brink of collapse. And we squeezed in one more. The World Bank warns on the dire state of the Palestinian economy because of the continuing war and its effect on employment and consumption on the West Bank. The Palestinian Authority finds itself in a spiraling fiscal crisis, which could only cope with by increasing arrears of payments and through foreign aid. Shows how bad the occupied West Bank's economy is doing. All right, let's bring in our guest for our first Q&A of the program. Joining us is Oliver Boyd Barrett. He is the Emeritus Professor of Ohio and California University. He's author of many books, such as The Conflict Narratives in Syria. Oliver Boyd Barrett, welcome to Economic Divide. Taking a look at the, I guess, warning that was issued by the World Bank on the dire state of the Palestinian economy, also on the Gaza Strip. Both are not doing well. There isn't much hope for recuperation at this point. We're wondering how long this is going to take, because the onslaught as we speak is still continuing. And what do you think about the future of the occupied West Bank, given the fact that you have the aggression in the Gaza Strip and the violence that's on a daily occurrence there in the occupied West Bank?
One thing is absolutely for sure is that the gravity of the situation is unprecedented. But the situation is extremely grim. As I think you just mentioned, we've seen a fall in the Palestinian economic activity of something like 80% in the last quarter. We have seen a total fall off in the work permits that would be available for Gazan workers in Israel. And we are seeing that on the West Bank, Palestinian workers are no longer being allowed to work on the settlements and on other construction activity.
You mentioned construction activity. I want to interrupt you there because we keep hearing about that in terms of how Palestinian workers are not permitted to not only work there, but how much they contribute to that sector. Can you expand a little bit more for us as to how that stands in terms of their contribution to the construction sector?
The construction industry in Israel is very, very badly hurt, and Palestinian workers have typically provided 65 to 70% of the labor on Israeli projects, including on the settlements in the West Bank. So there's absolutely no, it's absolutely clear that the extent of the damage to the Palestinian economy is immense.
All right, thank you for that. At least you gave us an idea there. Let's bring in our next guest, Gabriel Suarez. He served in the Ecumenical Accompaniment Program in Palestine and Israel in Hebron and Jericho. Gabriel Suarez, welcome to Economic Divide. The economy of the West Bank is in trouble. You've got 170,000 Palestinians that have been taken out of the economy because of the Israeli regime preventing them from coming to work. A decline in consumption as a result. You have a reduction in the tax revenues is another example as a result of that restriction. And this is money that Israel collects on behalf of the PA. How could there be any hope for the West Bank economy when you have those types of practices by the Israeli regime? And what are we looking at when it comes to the future when there's such violence happening in the occupied West Bank as a whole?
The situation in the West Bank was already suffering from the since the beginning of 2002. There has been a stepped up in violence and restrictions with the new government. Settler violence was very much a problem with Palestinians, both that in their own places, like in the agriculture, having their lands taken or restricted, or even their harvest being stolen or burned by Israeli fanatical settlers. And also the restrictions for even working inside those big settlements, those Israeli settlements in the West Bank. And of course, the dependency that they have on the remittances from both in the government sector, but also from outside. So it's very much a captive economy, as I said before, which it limits the prospect for freedom. There has been many different World Bank reports that the restriction and the takeover of land by Israel takes a lot from the potentials of the Palestinian economy everywhere in the West Bank.
It's time now for the Info News section of the program. First up, Argentina's economy. Well, we picked that last week, actually, so let's see what we got for you this week. This one is due to the cash that it's requesting from the IMF. Now, the Latin American country already owes the IMF some $44 billion. And this is not good news because one of the reasons is that Argentines are blaming austerity measures for Argentina's worst economic crisis in two decades. The austerity measures, cutting jobs, does not help contribute to the wheels of the economy to move forward. So subscribing to the IMF again for Argentina, that's not going to be good news. We'll have to wait and see. Next up, the financial system of the West is under the spotlight for the Russian president. He said that it's destroying its own financial system, according to Vladimir Putin. Policies enacted by the U.S. and the EU, according to him, have discredited Western banking and its currencies. Next up, we go to news from the continent of Africa, in particular Sudan. Its economy has contracted 40%. as this war there is raging on. State revenues has dipped by over 80%. The economy is continuing to shrink by about 20% projected for the year 2024. Next, another economy that we picked is India's economy. Now, it may have done well. The GDP has grown quite a bit, but it's masking economic challenges. The amount of growth was substantial for the year 2023, about 7.3%. Yet the private sector response was disappointing, and disinvestment increased. And that's pretty major for India. The amount of the increase was almost 29%. So that's not good news for the Indian economy. Now, to sustain this growth, the forthcoming Indian government must tackle rising inflation and economic challenges overall. But rising inflation is something they have to watch out for. Well, those were the topics that we picked for the InfoNews section. If you have anything in your mind, in wherever part of the world that you're at, do send them to us. Contact information is coming up.
Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
The economy of the West Bank, when you take a look at it, is one that operated under a siege. Income disparities, as an example, between Palestinian economy and that of Israel shows just that. Well, now with the onslaught, that situation has become worse, much worse. Let's take a look at some of the contributing factors. First up, we're going to take a look at the labor restrictions. Why not start with that, which has dealt a financial blow to the Palestinian economy. Israel has restricted laborers, the number 175,000. As a result of this restriction, wages of these workers accounted for $5.5 billion annually. Well, that's been taken out of the economy of the West Bank. It contributed to about a third of the combined economy of both the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. Next up, we take a look at another factor which prevents money from flowing into the economy, the withholding of the Palestinian Authority's tax revenues by the Israeli regime. Those revenues collected by Israel on behalf of the PA amounted to around $188 million monthly to pay 150,000 employees. Now, as an example, Israel had withheld $275 million, as you see there, for the year 2023 in these tax revenues. That includes cash collected for the prior months that was still with Tel Aviv. But only in February of this year, and that's not that long ago, they released $114 million. This is how Israel sways control over the PA. Next, let's take a look at what has occurred in the GDP contraction area when it comes to both the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. For the Gaza Strip, minus 80%. I mean, it's just incredible. Of course, shouldn't be that much of a surprise. You have 60 to 70% of the buildings there that have been decimated by the Israeli regime forces. When it comes to the occupied West Bank itself, minus 20%, and that's a good drop considering what is happening there in the West Bank, which we're going to get to in a second. But this contraction could even be a lot worse. Let's take a look at why I'm saying this contraction could be a lot worse. Next up, we'll show you the different areas that we picked in terms of the crisis that's ongoing in the West Bank. You have the Palestinians killed as of October 7th to amount to 412. So far, taking a look at the Palestinians that have been arrested, 8,000. Some figures put that as high as 10,000, and that's a lot. That's from October 7th, mind you. And then homes that have been demolished is another factor showing the crisis that's ongoing there, 200. This is a figure that the UN has released, including the numbers that have been arrested. So that's what's happening in the occupied West Bank. The other thing that we need to look at, and this is on a side note, is because of the Operation Al-Aqsa flood, we're going to see what I'm talking about in this next pointer here, if we can take a look at that, is the rising popularity of Ismail Haniyeh and Hamas in general. In the West Bank, it used to be at around 12%, but now the popularity of Hamas has almost quadrupled to 42%. So it shows how Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, in terms of its aim, has actually gained more popularity in the West Bank. And that's very important moving forward in terms of what's going to happen in the West Bank. Well, let's take a look at an overview of what challenges the West Bank faces. And these are just general in nature. Economic crisis is obviously one of the things that the West Bank is facing. A contributing factor to that is the conflict that's entailed there. We talked about the demolitions, about the abductions, and also the number of Palestinians killed. Financial challenges, one of the big ones, such as the PA tax revenue being withheld, and also movements, restriction of Palestinians in general, leads to some of the major challenges that the West Bank is facing. Let's bring back our guests and see what they think about all this. We have Oliver Boyd Barrett rejoining us, Emeritus Professor of Ohio and California University, author of many books like Conflict Narratives in Syria. Oliver Boyd Barrett, welcome back to Economic Divide. I'd like to zoom in on an announcement slash warning that the U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen actually issued against Netanyahu, where she said that he needs to take steps to prevent the collapse of the West Bank economy. As far as I recall, the U.S. has almost a direct hand in contributing to the West Bank economy, not in favor of the Palestinians, such as settlements, the freedom of movement. Indirectly, these are financially supported by the U.S. So isn't the U.S. Actually responsible in some regards?
Yeah. I think essentially Robert Kennett, RFK Jr., recently got it right when he described the role of Israel for the United States is as a kind of aircraft carrier is the term that he used. So for the United States, I think he has this right, Israel is a kind of permanently anchored aircraft carrier, and its purpose is to ensure that U.S. foreign policies in the Middle East are carried out, and that U.S. hegemony is sustained, and that efforts to resist or to compete with U.S. hegemony are suppressed.
All right, let me stop you there and ask you about if you can elaborate a little bit more about what you mean by that. I mean, when you say, for example, that Israel carries out U.S. interests in the region, what exactly is Israel doing for the U.S. that the U.S. is so keen on supporting Israel all out in almost everything, if not everything?
The function, once upon a time under the Shah of Persia, this was the function for the United States that Iran once played. Up until the revolution of 1979, when the role that that Iran had once played for U.S. empire was shifted to Israel, and I think that is the fundamental purpose of Israel to the United States. But of course, there are now this relationship is now consolidated by the financial links between Israeli or Israeli-friendly oligarchs in the United States and the Israeli regime, and the voting importance of pro-Israeli sentiment in particular for the Democratic Party in the United States. The relationship between Israel and the United States is extremely complicated, and it basically favors Israeli and not Palestinian interests.
All right, thank you for that. Let me bring in Gabriel Suarez, bring him back. He served in the Ecumenical Accompaniment Program in Palestine and Israel in Hebron and Jericho. Gabriel Suarez, welcome back to Economic Divide. The way that the U.S. is almost steering the post-onslaught scenario is is now quite evident. We know that the U.S. President Joe Biden wants a reformed PA in place, and then we have now Janet Yellen, for example, the Secretary General coming out, I'm sorry, the U.S. Treasury Secretary coming out and saying and warning Israel that it needs to take control of the West Bank economy, put it back into gear, make sure that it doesn't fall apart. Why do you think she has done that? Do you think it's because this becomes an existential threat to Israel if the West Bank economy falls apart?
I mean, it's a kind of a bargain, because at the same time they want to allow the settlements to thrive, to expand, to do everything from Israel to maintain control of the West Bank. There's a direct control over LSC, which is 60% of the West Bank. The major resources, the water is controlled by Israel. More than 90% of the water in the West Bank is controlled by Israel, while less than 20% goes to the Palestinians. And so there is a takeover, and the U.S. has been part of that during the Oslo Agreement. It has broken that takeover by allowing Israel to do what it wants, but when Palestinians try to go to the U.N. or try to move towards pressure with Israel, it always backed Israel completely. So basically completely a diplomatic immunity towards violations that are pretty clear against international laws in every single sense of the word, and in every major organization can agree on that.
The private sector in the West Bank and Gaza is estimated to have suffered losses of around $1.5 billion in production during the first 2 months of the conflict, equivalent to $25 million in losses per day. Before the onslaught, the World Bank had projected growth of 3.2% in 2023 for the economies of the Gaza Strip and the West Bank combined, but its updated estimate is economic contraction of 6.4%. This means a loss of $2.5 billion when it comes to its GDP. The Palestinian Authority has also been hit hard. Its independent revenues fell 10% in 2023 in comparison with estimates before the onslaught, and it would appear that the situation is only getting worse. Its deficit has grown fivefold to over $500 million, and it is already cutting its employees' pay drastically. Israel has also canceled work permits for over 170,000 Palestinian workers, which has weighed heavily on demand in the West Bank. The West Bank economy is mainly driven by the cities in which there have been the most confrontations, including in Nablus, and which are under constant military raids from Israel.
The economy of the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, and Palestine as a whole will not have any chances of a real economic recovery unless the broader Palestinian problem is resolved. The occupied West Bank's downward economic spiral has not even gained momentum. Now, the U.S. knows this, which is why it has ordered Israel to make sure that that does not happen. Because if that happens, if the West Bank becomes anything even close to what's happening there in the Gaza Strip, well, that would prove to be an existential threat to Israel. It was great having you with us, and I hope to see you next week. From me, Kaveh Tavwi, and the entire team here at Economic Divide, it's goodbye until then.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents. For humanity.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is Hussein Latifi and you're listening to a program for humanity from IRIB English Radio. I hope wherever you are, you're doing well. In this program, we talk about the concept of humanity and human being in the Holy Quran, different dimensions and aspects of this being. And in the previous episode, we ended up talking about human intellect and reason as one major faculty and one major dimension in the human soul. So we talked about different verses of the Holy Quran talking about the function and sometimes the obstacles against this faculty in the human soul. And we ended up talking about the relationship between reason and hawa, for example, hawa being the carnal desire, something that stops reason and sometimes captivates reason, taken as hostage and prisoner. A reason that is taken as hostage and prisoner cannot function well. And we talked about how the main struggle that we have in the Islamic teachings in general, in Quran and in Hadith, jihadun nafs, means that one struggles to create a balance between reason, his reason, and the desires that are there. So in this episode, we should talk about some other obstacles in the way of correct and proper thinking. So some of these obstacles are counted in the verses of the Holy Quran. One of them is imitation or following the footsteps of others without any evaluation. So to do something that looks similar to the acts of other doesn't have a problem in itself, because some people think that they should always do something different in order to establish their independence, which is another form of problem, which is called like conceit or arrogance. So no, we are not saying that a person must do something, always must do something different in order to establish his individual his individuality and his unique personality. No, sometimes if you do things that look similar to the acts of others, but at the same time these are the results of your own independent thinking, still it is counted as a rational decision. But the problem arises when people they do things only because other people are doing that, and that is something against the reason. And we can see that even in today's societies, that some people decide to do stuff sometimes without even giving it a thought, just because the flow of the society is in that direction, they also follow the suit. There are several verses related to this habit and this behavior. We recite some of them, inshallah, in this episode, and if we get time, in the next episode. One of them is this beautiful verse. فَلَمَّا جَاءَهُمْ مُوسَى بِآيَاتِنَا. When Prophet Musa عليه السلام went to his people, قَالُوا مَا هَذَا إِلَّا سِحْرٌ مُفْتَرًى. One common label that would, or accusation that would be leveled against the prophets of God was this, that this is magic, this is sihr. وَمَا سَمَعْنَا بِهَذَا فِي أَبَائِنَا الْأَوَّلِينَ. We have not heard something like this from our the previous fathers, like ancestor forefathers. As if it is something new, then we should reject it. In order for something to be correct, it should be among the, I don't know, the teachings among the heritage of the fathers. Well, this is not correct. This is not necessarily everything that comes to people from their forefathers is the true thing. So we will have a break and we come back to continue our discussion.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. This is Hossein Latifi, and you're listening to a program for humanity. In this episode, we were talking about the role of tradition, following the tradition, following the social behavior, social habits, in creating obstacles on the way of the reason. And we said, according to the verses of the Holy Quran, to do something that looks like the acts of other doesn't have a problem of and in itself, but the problem is that some people, without thinking about their actions, they just do them sometimes because of the social flow. Another verse, and we recited one verse about that, that people, when they wanted to reject the message of Prophet Musa alayhi salam, they said, the problem with this message is that we have not heard such a thing among the heritage that we have inherited from our forefathers. مَا سَمَعْنَا بِهَذَا فِي أَبَاءَنَا الْأَوَّلِينَ. This is something new. This is not, this does not exist in the tradition that we follow. Or, for example, in another verse, we recite, وَإِذَا قِيلَ لَهُمْ اتَّبِعُوا مَا أَنزَلَ اللَّهُ. When they are told, follow what has been revealed from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Follow the revelation from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. قَالُوا بَلْ نَتَّبِعُوا مَا أَلْفَيْنَا عَلَيْهَا أَبَاءَنَا. They say, we will follow whatever that have come to us from our fathers. بَلْ نَتَّبِعُ مَا أَلْفَيْنَا. Whatever that is within the tradition, within the habits and the common behavior of our fathers, we only follow that. أَوَلَوْ كَانَ أَبَاءُهُمْ لَا يَعْقِلُونَ شَيْئًا وَلَا يَهْتَدُونَ. Quran asks a question. Does this following extend to limits that goes beyond the boundaries of reason? Do they still follow their forefathers, even if their forefathers did not think about something? لا يعقلون شيئا. They did not think about something. ولا يهتدون. And they were misguided. So to what extent do you want to follow the tradition? Following the tradition in itself might not be bad, but have you even given it a thought that sometimes the tradition might not be rational, might not be thoughtful, so you should think about it yourself. You should spend some time pondering and contemplating about different aspects of that behavior. So this is a common attitude of the people in the past that would say it against the teachings of the Prophet. Also, we have it nowadays. Sometimes people, only because it is against the social norm, like for example hijab, some people say, well, this is not something that the people in the 21st century agree with, the majority of people. Well, it's not a basis for argument against something. That majority of people might be against something that is good, majority of people, for different reasons. So, Quran says this in itself is not a sufficient reason to reject something or to accept something. One should think independently about a behavior, about a belief, and then reject or accept it based on his own analysis and evaluation of it. Thank you very much for listening, inshallah. Until next episode, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
صلى الله على النبي صلى الله على محمد وعلى آل النبي.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.